What gives us the most hope? I think the most hope is that there are people who are willing to change, who are willing to change that industry. It's, in the end, it's all about people. I mean, us people are able to innovate the world. We are able, we fixed the CFK problem. We fixed the acid rain problem. And so a lot of the environmental problems that we had as a society, we were able to fix. And it's because of people wanting to change, and people wanting to change the world and make the world better. So the hope I have is in our people.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. Martin Koopmans is the CEO of KLM Cityhopper. While it's the regional subsidiary of the Dutch national carrier KLM, it actually operates a very large number of flights for the airline. And that means it can have a significant impact on turning operations sustainable for the airline. Martin Koopmans is leading this from the front. In fact, before he became the CEO of KLM Cityhopper, he used to look after, guess what, sustainability, and was one of the original members of the Bold Ideas team that finally led to SkyTeam's Sustainable Flight Challenge. Martin and I dive deep into how a regional airline can be a harbinger for sustainable aviation. Enjoy the conversation. Martin Koopmans, you are the CEO of KLM Cityhopper, which is the regional airline for KLM. You are flying intra-Europe, short-haul flights. Isn't your airline and your operation the first that will be replaced by sustainable means? What is your pathway?
It will not be replaced, but it will be sustainable. Because yes, the shorter flights are most under pressure, right? Because we all hear in the news, trains are a good alternative for short distances. And they are for some of the short distance flights, but not for many of them. For example, if you want to take a train from the Netherlands to Trondheim, for example, one of the destinations we fly, well, I can tell you it's almost impossible. And that accounts for most of the destinations that we fly to. So yes, there is pressure on the shorter flights. And yes, a train might be and will be an alternative for some of those destinations. But when I look at the current situation and how much the situation has changed over the years and how difficult it is for the European railways to get aligned, this might be 5 to 10, so a handful or more that we can do. But for the rest, I don't think the train is a real alternative at the moment or will be in the near future. And it's our ambition to do something about those short-haul flights and make them sustainable, because they are the most under pressure, but they are also the least difficult. It's difficult, I'm not going to lie about it, but they are the least difficult to make sustainable. When you look at fuel use, for example, those kind of things, we as KLM Cityhopper are 55% of all the flights of KLM out of Schiphol. So we are the largest airline operating at Schiphol Airport, to be honest. But our fuel bill, when you look at the total of KLM, is less than 10%. So there is reason for us to move ahead on the use of sustainable airline fuel and thus make the shorter flights most sustainable as soon as possible. So yes, we're most under pressure, but we're also the least difficult to make sustainable. So that's where my ambition lies. I have a strong ambition on this field, to be honest.
Okay, so let's focus on
the positive aspect, right? So I, as I understand, a number of your frequencies are to London City Airport, to Paris, to, yeah, you know, Frankfurt, and perhaps to other cities in mainland Europe itself, which are well connected by train, which are under pressure to become more sustainable as a flight option. What are some of the things you're doing to make these regional flights more sustainable today?
We started the program within Cityhopper, which is called the Fair Line. We have started this because of an initiative, and I don't know if you've heard about that initiative from other, from my other colleagues, but during the COVID crisis, we started a movement within KLM, and it's called the Bold Moves Movement. And this movement was started by a couple of executives. I was among them. And we connected to some youngsters, just started with the company, 15 people in total. And we said to our board in the midst of the COVID crisis, guys, let's come out of this crisis differently than we went in. And different in the way, in the aspect of sustainability. We need to really change. We need to make some bold moves on sustainability. So there were, we were working with 15 people. It grew very quickly to 100 people because this was an advantage of working online. When you work online, you can, other people can join. So two months after we went to the board to tell them that we would come forward with bold moves, we came forward with 10 bold moves. One of them is the Sustainable Flight Challenge, which you might have heard of, which has been adopted by the SkyTeam Alliance and where we participate, of course. So, but one of the other of the bold moves was called the Fair Line. And we said it's quite difficult to change KLM. It's a large company. It's a lot of machinery going on. You know what a large company is like, right? So we said we were inspired by some other companies that started a factory across the street and they were not able to do their sustainability. They were not able to get to where they wanted to until they started the factory across the street and gave that factory freedom to do what they needed to do. And then they were able to produce a sustainable product. So we said we should also start a factory across the street. And we looked at, but then you look at the airline industry and it's not that we have that much cash to start a new airline just out of nothing. So we said, but we have small factories across the street, as we say, small factories, which are Transavia and KLC. And maybe we should make them the spearhead of sustainability. And then we decided that that KLC would be the best choice. Because in the end, the goal is to make KLM sustainable. KLC is part of the KLM network. KLC is at the heart of the network. I mean, 55% of the flights are KLC. So we said the bold move is to start a program that's called the Fair Line. So where we want, where we have a goal in 2028 to really make big steps. Big steps on fuel use, big steps on the product on board, big steps on how we heat our buildings. So we actually have some targets which go to up to net zero. Difficult because a lot of people are talking about 2050. We're talking about 2028, right? And so it's a really strong target.
Wait, just to jump in, you're saying KLM Cityhopper will be net zero by 2028?
That's what we aim for. Well, it has all to do with the use of SAF, honestly, because
okay,
SAF plays a major role. But that's one of the goals we're working for, and we're still working on a lot of things to get there. But that's the goal we go for.
So let's just dig into that a little. If you want to be net zero by 2028, you need a lot of SAF. What percentage of SAF are you using now, and what do you need to use by 2028?
Yeah, we use for all KLM flights 1%. But when you look at the total fuel bill of KLM and you look at the part that Cityhopper has, it's less than 10%. So if we would move the plans for SAF that we have right now, we would move it to KLM Cityhopper, within even the current mandate, we would be able to do all the flights from KLM Cityhopper on SAF. This is something we're still discussing. This is something we are still contemplating. We're not there yet, and probably we need more because it's not enough to just do Cityhopper. It's a big thing. Don't get me wrong, but that's the discussion we are having right now within the company to see where we can get to. But on the other hand, with less than 10% of the total fuel bill, you could make 100% of 55% of all flights on SAF. And that's not a small thing. And sometimes it's better to focus your energy where you can make a real step than spread it out over everything. At least that's my opinion.
Definitely. So let's talk, step back. You mentioned two things, right? The second thing was Bold Moves, which was the SkyTeam flight challenge. Now, tell me why you were, of course, one of the initial people who came up with the idea. Why wasn't this meant to be just a KLM thing? Why did you expand this to SkyTeam?
Well, the thing is, if you want to organize a race, or however you want to call it, a challenge in this case, because it was all inspired by the 1934 London-Melbourne race, where the Dutch Uyver won the race. So that's how we got with the team to the idea. And we said, yeah, but if you want to win a race, you can't run the race. So we need somebody else to run the race. So we came up with that idea. And then we said, we need others to be competing with us. And we need a judge, which is not ourselves, because that might not be very the way to do it. So therefore, we asked SkyTeam if they would be interested to organize this. And they were very, very enthusiastic about it and decided to do so. So we did it last year for the first time, and this year in May for the second time. And it's been really inspiring to see how many things people can come up with and things that we really need to put into daily operations. But it has been a lot of fun. It has brought a lot of energy into the teams. I mean, this was a big success.
Now, zooming in, SkyTeam Flight Challenge has of course run last year and this year, 2 years already. I remember last year something interesting you did, and I want to dig a little deeper into that. KLM Cityhopper operated a flight from Amsterdam to Porto in Portugal, which was
yes.
The slowest airspeed ever for that flight, and yet it was the shortest time gate to gate.
Correct.
How in the world do you even achieve that?
Well, I think a lot of gain is in the airspace, to be honest. Because what we see, and I've been in the environmental part of KLM since 2006, and one of the first things we worked on was single European sky. If we could get single European sky, we would be 15% more efficient and less fuel use already. So what we did on this Porto flight was actually a straight line. We were able to convince all the different ATCs that they should give us the shortest line. And that's what we actually did. So if you look back on that flight, it's really with a linear, it's a straight line. So that you could not make that flight any shorter. And that made it the shortest, slowest flight and quickest flight we have ever made to Porto. And if you would see the line that we flew last May to Trondheim, you would see the same. I think we might have even done a little bit better.
You're saying just a straight line makes so much difference that you will save enough fuel and save enough time?
Yeah.
Why can't we just do this tomorrow? Why isn't this becoming a reality?
Good question. I think we're all in. I mean, the airlines really want this to happen. And yes, not all flights might be a straight line because of traffic and those kind of things. Yeah? But
Okay. But
a lot of this is politics. And I think I think it has to do with the different member states that do not want to give up the power to govern their own airspace, and in the end they don't seem to be able to work together in the most optimal way. It is possible. I mean, we have done it now on a couple of flights, so don't tell us it's not possible. But it's just a matter of politics, and we've been pushing this subject as KLM for a long time already. But it's troublesome, and honestly, when I look at what we are aiming for, with our initiative within KLC, I'm not even looking at single European sky, because I've been working on that for 15 years now, and we haven't gotten much further, right? So I could be saying, okay, they should do this and Europe should do that. But what I'm looking at right now is what can we do ourselves? What can we do without putting the blame on somebody else? Like, oh, they should help us. And if they don't help us, I cannot be sustainable. Yes, it would really help. And yes, we would be super hyped if it would finally happen. But I'm not very optimistic about that, to be honest. And it's just politics, right? It has nothing to do with technical problems or innovations that we still need. It's feasible. We can do it tomorrow. We've done it.
Yeah, there are results here to show as well. Now let's focus on the things we can control. You mentioned you have made a number of big steps on the product on board. What are some of the things that you've done that have had the biggest impact in making flight sustainable?
On that specific challenge or in general, on every flight that we fly right now?
Perhaps with the specific challenge first and then what has transpired into other flights.
Yeah, on a specific challenge, there's a thing that we did. We looked very carefully at the packaging of all our of all the food that we brought on board. What we have done, and it helped tremendously, it's a very simple thing. It's called gate catering. So you don't bring all the food and drinks on board beforehand, but the customers could take what they would like before they entered the plane. And what we saw was that they take much less than we would normally take. They have more choice. And in the end, when we look at those flights in the Sustainable Flight Challenge, we had zero waste in the end because we were able to recycle all the materials that came off board. We had an intern working on that. And in the end, there were 7 streams, and she was able to reduce the waste to 0 because everything was recycled. So that's what we did on that one particular flight. When you look at all the flights, we're looking at what kind of food do we bring? What is the package that we bring? It might be very, very small, but we bring on board food that needs to be cooled. And we cannot be 100% sure that it has been cooled back and forth. So when it's not used, we have to throw it away. This is about sandwiches. We have decided, because of the amount of waste that we generated, to change some of those sandwiches to what we call banana bread. And banana bread has you don't need to have it cooled. And that saves us hundreds and thousands of sandwiches per year. It's very small when you look at the bigger scale, right? And it's not something we will advertise, but it's a small, it's a step that we needed to take. And we're looking at different, so packaging is very important for the product on board. And the recyclability or upcyclability of the materials that you use. So those are the things we're focusing on. But the funny thing is that gate catering sounds so simple. But it's actually, there's one thing we still need to conquer. If you are traveling with kids or anything, and you have all your hands full and you have to take some of the stuff on board, that might be a bit difficult for people. So we're still looking into how to do that. But if you think a little bit further, do we need all galleys on board? Or could we put more chairs into the aircraft, which makes it more efficient? So it sounds small, but it might have a big impact in the end.
It's very interesting, and I think some of the experiments you are doing are useful not just to KLM, but to other airlines as well. For example, if you take a galley out and put more seats, that's helpful to someone like Transavia, which is a low-cost airline for a higher density seating. That's quite encouraging. Looking at still, you know, very specific use case of KLM Cityhopper, you are directly impacted by government regulations, for example, the short-haul flying ban that is now in effect in France, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If you are saying that by 2028, your flights will be net zero, flying on SAF, do these government actions make sense? Because I can fly completely sustainably, or I might need to take a train which is powered by, you know, a coal electricity source at the end of it. So it's not necessarily green. So then what do we do?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Because that's the reason why we're doing it. I mean, the reason why we're doing this is because we think that if we do this, there is no reason to ban those short flights anymore. Because we perform them in a sustainable way. And we need to do a little bit more than SAF, because SAF solves like 80% of the problem. We still might need to do some compensation or other stuff. We're working on a lot of different things as well. But let's say that with SAF, you could argue that those flights are quite sustainable and there's no reason to be bashing us so much. So I feel that in a couple of years, if we would be able and are able to make this happen, then there would be less or even no reason to pound us on the head for the short flights anymore.
So one of the reasons why there is bashing, especially in Europe, is because of the source of SAF. SAF often is currently coming from feedstocks or biofuels, for example. In fact, it's not just industry outsiders. We've recently had Akbar Al-Bakr, the CEO of Qatar Airways, who says there's no way we will reach our SAF mandates by 2030 because there's not enough feedstock. Now you have voices from within the industry saying this. Where are you going to get your SAF and what are your sources? And what do you say to someone like the CEO of Qatar Airways?
Well, I think he's sitting on a lot of oil, that's first. So that might influence a little bit what he's saying. Although he's right. At the moment, it is difficult to get enough feedstock. And I've been involved in KLM's environmental policy since 2006. I was head of environmental strategy within KLM. We went to Brussels and we said to Brussels, to the EU, we want you to make regulations for SAF. We want you to write down that biofuels might not cannot have an effect on the soil, cannot have a negative effect on food supply, a number of things. And they were like, guys, you're an airline. What are you doing here? Why would you make it so difficult for yourselves? I said, because this is the goals that we have set for the SAF that we want to use. And if we make it difficult for ourselves, I want to make it difficult for everyone, right? So we are very, very careful in the SAF we use. And it's difficult to find the right feedstock. It's true. It's absolutely true. Although I think there are more opportunities than today. It's all a matter of demand and supply. And if there is not any demand, supply will also not come. But if you look a little bit further, I think HEFA, as they call it right now, the bio-based feedstock, is something we might use for the coming years. But when you look further ahead, we do feel that synthetic fuel is the way to go. And with synthetic fuel, the feedstock is not an issue. The energy, that's the issue. Because you need enough green energy to make this synthetic fuel, and that's still quite a challenge. To be clear, it's something which I'm very optimistic about the energy transition that our planet is going through. I think 20 or 30 years from now there will be so much green energy that we don't even know what to do with it anymore. For that, but the question is not today. The problem is it's not today. It's 20, 30 years from now. How do we get there? How do we get from today to there? Because we need a lot of green energy to make for all the uses of transportation and all the other uses that we have. So there's quite a competition right now for that green energy, and so what we really need is the stimulation of solar energy, wind energy. Those kind of energies is what is helping us in the end to be able to make SAF. Because I think when we look at the future, there's also a lot about battery operated aircraft and hydrogen aircraft. I think yes, there might be a market for those aircraft, but it'll take a long time. And the good thing about kerosene is the energy density of the stuff is great. So if you could just make that same stuff in a sustainable way, which we're working on with the sustainable airline fuel, then we have quite a good solution.
Yeah, it's an easy way out, right? It's drop in. It works with the current systems without changing the infrastructure.
It's very difficult, but it's an easy way out. When you look at the industry, I agree with you. For our industry, maybe it's not an easy way out, but it's the one thing that we could do in the coming years that could really make a dent in this discussion. You know, so from a technical perspective, it's easy. It's more from an economical perspective where it's difficult, and the availability of green energy that is quite difficult.
You're absolutely right, and you know, you are sitting in Amsterdam, which is one of the actual hubs for sustainable aviation fuel other than California. Globally, there are multiple regions like Australia. Australia has zero SAF. Japan today has zero SAF, might have some SAF in the future. So there are parts of the world where there is no SAF and no SAF roadmap, let alone having production facilities that can scale. So yes, the distribution is quite inequitable right now, and the availability as well. So your goal to get to net zero by 2028 is something, you know, we'll all be watching very, very closely as an industry, because I think there'll be lessons for everyone. Now, all's well with your net zero by 2028, primarily depending on SAF. But going forward, regional and short-haul flying are those which will benefit the most from the rise of electric travel, eVTOLs, even hydrogen. What is your long-term goal and medium-term goal? Are you working on concepts like electric planes? Are you working with the likes of Heart Aerospace, Zero Avia, and others? What is your medium and long-term plan to become sustainable?
Absolutely, absolutely. We are, look, the goals that we've set for 2028 are based on the current fleet that we have. And I think a lot of people try to take a leap forward. Like, we will do something later, it will happen. I want to do something now. That's why we set those goals for 2028. It's all with the current fleet. And we have, with the E2, a very fuel-efficient aircraft aboard. I mean, it's 60% less noise than the E1 and 30% more fuel-efficient per passenger than the E1, which is already a very efficient aircraft. So that's our first goal. But be assured that we don't stop in 2028. 2028 is not an end goal. I mean, we are already talking to Embraer, of course, because it's an important partner of ours, on the next aircraft. And what is ahead? And yes, you're right. The first that will fly a new type of aircraft will be the regional carriers, because these kind of things always start small, and you have to start with the shorter distances. So yes, our goals after 28 are to fly, to be among the first, or maybe the first, I don't know, to fly an electric aircraft. But when I look at the current developments, and I've been talking to a lot of those guys, and I have an engineering background. I was working in engineering and maintenance for the years before I came to Cityhopper. So I can look a little bit through what's happening right now. It's very, very difficult to build a new aircraft from scratch. You need a couple of billion for a development of such a new aircraft. So there's quite some initiatives, and I applaud those initiatives, right? Because I think it's important that people are working on that. But it's a difficult task. It's a really difficult task. And then there is still the discussion on where are we going? Is it battery, or is it fuel cell and hydrogen based? I will just take three professors who are for batteries and three professors from universities that know everything. I put them in the same room. 15 minutes later, I have a fight, because I feel that discussion has not been finalized yet. There's so much discussion on where this will go. So I'm anxious to be in that space, but honestly, I don't know where it's going right now. And when you look at the energy density of batteries, we're quite far from where we need to go. I mean, there is some initiatives that talk about 500 watt, I don't know exactly how they, 450 or 500 watts per whatever. But when it only becomes interesting when we are even at 1,000. So the aircraft that we've seen right now, given the regulations that we have for reserve, they might bring you a couple of hundred kilometers, but that's just a very small part of the network. Doesn't mean we're not interested. Doesn't mean we're not talking to all of them. But I'm not sure that we have found the solution yet. And that's also why it's so interesting, because there's a lot of opportunities there still. There's new entrants busy with it. There's even a Dutch company working on electric aircraft, which is called Maeve. And we are talking to a lot of those companies and see whether it's possible or not. And I'm a very positive person, but I'm also a bit of a realistic person, and I think it will take some time.
I'm glad to hear, Martin, that you are looking at the multiple technologies. We are very familiar with Maeve. There is another startup called Cosmic, which might be interesting. And of course, Heart Aerospace is doing a lot of work in that field as well. And I do look forward to seeing what you work on. Now, you also sit in a very unique situation where in the Netherlands or in the part of Europe you are in, there is significant consumer awareness and climate activism about these issues as well. How do you, as the CEO of KLM Cityhopper, deal with climate activists and customers who are climate aware? How do you incorporate them in the process?
Yeah, well, I think we... I look at different parts of the spectrum, right? You have the people who are extremely activist. It doesn't matter what we do, they will be against it. Those are the ones that don't even want to talk to us. We might want to talk to them. They don't want to talk to us. They just want to shut down the airline industry. Okay, guys, they have had their function. That's what I said. They have made people aware. And you have to sometimes be a bit more extreme to wake up people. So they have played their role. They made us aware, but we are now in a space where we want to change. So please, guys, help us change. I know we need to change. It's not something we would say, these people are saying something and we don't care about that. No, we care. We do care, and we want to make our industry more sustainable, and we want to be a pioneer in that. So it might sound a bit strange, but I don't need those people anymore. They have done what they need to do. They have made a lot of people aware, and they have also made the general public more aware. But what we need right now is support. We need people to support us to make that transition, because it's a costly and difficult transition. And we also need customers to be wanting to pay for that, because this will probably cost money. Well, this will cost money. So we need those more aware customers to be wanting to pay a bit more to be able to fly in a sustainable way. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's something that will happen across the world. And I don't think it's so bad that in the Netherlands it might be more than somewhere else. It means that we are ahead of the curve. When there's more pressure, there's also more need to change, because the people are more aware and they will also be more willing to pay for a different product.
I'm curious if you've seen any trends. Are Dutch flyers and consumers more willing to pay, and are they showing this by paying more for carbon offsetting or SAF on your flights?
It's starting, but there's a big say and do gap here, and I think we recognize that, right? Because I started within KLM in 2007 a compensation program. So this was not SAF yet, but we had a CO2 compensation program, and 10% of the people said they would do it, and 0.5% of the people really did it. So there is still a say-do gap here, but I think it's tilting right now. It's changing. I think right now really is the time that people are willing to pay for it. I hear people who say, okay, if it's this much more expensive and I know it's sustainable, I will do it. Or people who do take the train to Bilbao or Madrid, which takes them 3 days and much more money. So it might still be a small segment of people, but if you ask me, that segment will grow quite quickly right now. What you see in changes in real transitions, that it takes a long time
before something happens, and then suddenly it fears up. And I feel that we are there. We are in that point of history. And I might be wrong a couple of years, but it's going to happen. And I think then if it's going to happen, it's good to be at the forefront of it.
I'm again going to be closely watching what trends you see. There is indeed a say-do gap, but hopefully, given the position you're in at KLM Cityhopper, you can actually close that gap quite well. And finally, Martin, what gives you the most hope for the future of sustainable aviation?
What gives us the most hope? I think the most hope is that there are people who are willing to change, who are willing to change that industry. It's, in the end, it's all about people. I mean, us people are able to innovate the world. We are able, we fixed the CFK problem. We fixed the acid rain problem. And so a lot of the environmental problems that we had as a society, we were able to fix. And that's because of people wanting to change and people wanting to change the world and make the world better. So the hope I have is in our people. And I also applaud young people who are a bit afraid to work for KLM because they said, is it the best company to work for because I'm going to work for a company that's not sustainable. Okay, come and work with me. Come and help because we need you guys. We need people to make that change. And I think that change is around the corner. And it might be even here already because we are having this interview where there's a lot of attention on sustainability in the airline industry. I mean, 15 years ago, I was the head of environmental strategy within KLM. I can tell you, there was not so much interest. I was really fighting to get people's attention. And we started a biofuel company with Sky Energy, and we worked together with the World Wildlife Fund in that time. And we were, I always want to win prizes, right? So we were the first in the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. It was all good and well. But I do feel now things are really changing. It's starting now, or maybe 1 or 2 years ago, but we're in the midst. It's really different than 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I was a zealot. I was the one within the company that was saying, guys, we need to go somewhere. And they were all like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Lone Ranger.
Yeah. But now I'm not the Lone Ranger anymore, not at all.
Yeah, I think there's a groundswell happening, and I see it not just as the different airline CEOs I speak with, airport CEOs, manufacturer, OEMs who are coming in together. So the conversations are happening every place. You'll have the odd man out who will still pursue growth over all costs. But I think there's very good awareness. Now, Martin, to close up this interview, we have a fun round called the Rapid Fire Round. You have not seen these questions before. And I will ask you simple questions and you have to give me the one word answer that comes to you. So we'll start with something very simple. It's a bit personal. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book, Brothers Lionheart. It's a kid's book, which I read when I was very young.
Very interesting. I will check it out. What's your favorite city?
My favorite city is Barcelona.
Okay. And you do fly there quite often. Your favorite movie?
Bitter Moon. It's Bitter a bit Moon. Dark maybe, but that's my favorite movie.
It's interesting between your book and your movie theme. It's dark and sad. So we need a bit of uplifting here. What do you do in your free time, Martin?
Oh, what do I do in my free time? I ride my race bicycle. I play tennis. I play padel. I'm the coach of my kids' hockey, tennis, football teams. And I have dinner with my wife.
Nice. Who cooks, you or she?
Both of us. Both of us cook. So, but honestly, most of the time it's her. And not me.
Okay, I'm glad to know.
But today, for example, it's barbecue time.
What is something you want to learn, Martin?
Yeah. Something I want to learn. What do I want to learn? I would like to learn to play the piano, which I haven't found time for. I have a very nice piano downstairs in my house, which I like classic stuff, which still has quality. I live in an old house. I refurbished the whole house. I isolated it 10 years ago. It looks like 100 years old, but it's good as new. And I have a very low energy bill. So I like to revive old things. I just turned 50 a couple of years ago.
Is that why you have an old Fokker on KLM Cityhopper on top of Schiphol?
Exactly. You need plane. To honor where you came from. You need to not put it away. It's something you should be proud of. Your Very history nice. Is something you need to be proud of.
Well said. Who do you look up to, Martin?
Who do I look up to? I look up to people who were ahead of the curve, who could see where things are going. And
yes.
So I look up to Steve Jobs. I look up to Elon Musk. I mean, they might not always be the friendliest guys around, but those were the guys that had a vision, that saw a future, and nobody was going to stop them to get there. And they did it. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who have these kind of ideas or might want to do something, but these are the people that really made that change.
Indeed, I'm glad to hear. And final question: what is the best advice you've received?
The best advice I've received is to stay close to yourself. Very corny, but it's really, don't try to be somebody you're not. Try to be yourself and never give up. Stay yourself and never give up. That's also what I always tell my kids. We don't go back and we don't give up.
I'm glad to hear. Martin, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm very excited about your vision of making sustainable aviation a reality very soon. Loved your experiments with the SkyTeam Sustainable Flight Challenge and, you know, the Bold Moves initiative that you came up with. Congratulations on all the progress. And once again, truly enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries. Yet, there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our Supervising Editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Mira Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.